Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Yvonne Pierre Show. Hear from people who have overcome obstacles, have inspirational stories to tell, or helpful information to share.
Our child, and we were to take her home. Remarkable advice for that era when many children with Down syndrome were put in institutions.
I was living for today, not caring about tomorrow.
The Yvonne Pierre Show, a variety talk show whose only mission is to empower you.
That were only gonna bring this to my knees. And I turned around and I remember this 48 years later of when I turned around and I said to her, no, I can do it. That kind of set the tone to her right from the beginning that even though I was in a chair, you know, I was still independent. I was still going to do things.
I believe that everything happens for a reason. We are vessels that have the option to allow God to use us.
Make a choice to break the generational curses on our life.
Thank you for tuning in. Now, here is your host, Yvonne Pierre.
Welcome, and thank you all so much for tuning in. I have a really great show today. I'm your host, Yvonne Pierre. And it's back to school time for most of us. My kids went back on August 5th, but for most schools, for a lot of different counties here in Georgia and different school systems across, you know, in different states, school haven't started yet. So what better time is it to have a discussion about advocating for your children that have special needs? So today I have a great panel of guests who will be joining us online to discuss special education advocacy. And I hope you guys can hear me good because I just got a new phone line. I've been advocating for over five years, but my advocacy is specifically through projects such as this radio show and through other online projects that I do, specifically HYH Online, which stands for Have You Heard? However, my guests today are more hands-on in the field of advocacy. Let me briefly introduce you to them. Janet Cordova is a proud mom, well, we like to say DS mom. She has a son named Tate who has Down syndrome, and she also advocates working with underprivileged families, helping them navigate the Denver public school system. She's a ESP advocate, and we'll get more into that later in the show. Janet Folk is the director of special projects for the Parent-to-Parent of Georgia, a parent information source that offers a variety of services to Georgia families of children with disabilities. Pam Letterman is a proud mom of two special needs children, one with cerebral palsy and one with a learning disability. She's an advocate as well, and she's the founder of the IEP Advocate Incorporated. And Mark was my fourth guest, and Mark was once a student in the special education system, due to her learning disability. But she has gone on to receive her two bachelor's degrees, one in human development and the other one in special education, and she also has a master's in education. I really think that all four ladies are my hat's off to them. I really admire all of them, and I think that hopefully you'll gain a lot of information in today's show. So I'm going to try to speed it up a little bit. But first, before I welcome my guest on, I want to play a song called Silent Angels. Silent Angels, I had a lady on a while back. Her name is Amy Sanchez, and she produced a song called Silent Angels for the International Rett Syndrome Association Awareness Campaign. It was their theme song. So I want to play Silent Angels for you, and then after that I'll bring my guest on. This is Silent Angels by Amy Sanchez.
I call
face turned cold in her hands as the candle burned low. She says, dream on, my sweet baby girl. The angels are here. Sitting back, she can see through the pain. A star catches her eye. By one they light up the sky, leading the way. We can be the voice for the silent angel on this night of a thousand stars. Hold each other's hand, it's time to take a stand as we fight the fight.
Please join me in welcoming my guest, Janet Cordova, and I hope I'm pronouncing your names right, ladies. Janet Cordova, Jennifer Folk, Pam Ledman, and Ann Mock. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Pam, did I pronounce your name right?
It was close. It's Lindemann.
Lindemann, okay.
Okay.
Well, I want to jump right into the questions since we have a lot that we want to cover. First, I want to go one by one and let you all introduce yourselves, and we'll start with Ann.
Okay. I am Ann Mock. I have a learning disability, and I am a special ed teacher. The reason I got into the field of special ed was when I was in second grade, I had a horrible experience, and I didn't want, you know, any other child to experience what I had to go through.
What was it that you experienced that led you to be a teacher?
My second grade teacher told me in front of my mom that I should be locked up, that I would be a burden to society because of my learning disability.
Wow. And we're going to come back to that.
Okay.
I want to ask Pam, what motivated you to launch? Introduce yourself and also tell us what motivated you to launch the IEP Advocate program, organization that you have.
Sure. My first child is Catherine. She's 14 now, but she has cerebral palsy, and she's in a wheelchair and doesn't walk or talk and is dependent upon us for everything. But when she was young, I realized that if she was going to have the best shot in life, and especially in school, then it was up to me to figure out the system. So I started working with a large number of agencies. I'm in Central Florida, and worked with agencies throughout the state just to learn different things. And, did it primarily for her to help myself out, but then I started helping other parents and found that there's such a great need out there that this is really where Catherine gave me direction in my life. And then my son was born 16 months later, and he has learning disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So between the two of them, I cover a broad spectrum of personal experience.
Wow. And so you launched the IEP Advocate during that time, or was it later after?
It went official with the IEP Advocate a couple years ago because I felt there was such a strong need to educate parents. And I wanted to educate, empower, and encourage parents to be good advocates for their children in the public school system. And so in addition to doing individual meetings, I do a lot of training so that parents, I think in order to make systemic change in the system, parents are the ones who have the power in the system. And so, but they need to learn what their rights are, and they need to learn, you know, strategies for advocating for their children, and that's why I started the organization that I did.
Wow, and we thank you. We thank you for
this. Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Jeanette, I keep calling you Jeanette. Jeanette, tell us a little more about the Denver Metro CPRC and the role that you play as an outreach advisor and parent advisor.
Sure. I'm Jeanette Cordova, and I am the mom to an 8-year-old boy who is enhanced with an extra chromosome, as I like to say, but it's Down syndrome. So I kind of got my start when he was born, and I received the support from the parent centers and from the Down syndrome organization locally that I decided it was a good way to give back by volunteering. Ended up working for the Down Syndrome Association for 3 years, and then now I work cross disability. So I basically found my calling as an advocate for individuals with disabilities, not just to advocate for my son, but for everyone. So I started with Denver Metro Community Parent Resource Center in November of 2008, and we are one of 107 parent centers in the United States.
Wow.
And so we provide information and skills to parents and professionals through our workshops because we believe it's not just educating the parents, it's also educating the professionals. And by professionals, I mean teachers, educators, doctors, you name it, any professional that works with our children. We do mentoring to parents to become independent advocates for their kids, and then in turn they can teach self-advocacy to their children. We outreach to underserved groups to identify their disabilities and also provide them support and services. We have a cadre of volunteers that help go on IEPs with other parents because that is a real need here. The ARCs around the United States are wonderful support and can help, but a lot of times they're tapped out. So we like to train our volunteers to be able to go on an IEP with a parent. And then we do parent advising by phone, in person, via mail, and then we do referrals to make sure that they're connected to any and all agencies, organizations, nonprofits that are out there helping parents with disabilities.
Wow.
That's us in a nutshell.
Well, thank you. Thank you for what you're – I want to thank all of you for what you're doing. I want to ask Jennifer next. Parent to Parent of Georgia offers – well, actually, let me let you introduce what Parent to Parent of Georgia is and the type of information that you provide for parents that have kids with special needs.
Well, it was good that Jeanette went before me because – essentially, we're part of that 107 Parent Center network in the United States, and we are the Georgia Parent Training Center. And correct me if I'm wrong, Jeanette, but the organization that you're working with is a community grant, and you're working with the Denver community, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It is
a
grant through the federal, federal grant,
right,
through the OSEP.
Mm-hmm. And Parent to Parent of Georgia provides all of those same functionality at a state level. And the Office of Special Education has identified at least one parent center in each of our states. And so we provide that service in Georgia. But the services are very similar to what Jeanette just described.
And what inspired you to get involved with Parent to Parent?
For 9 years, I just joined Parent to Parent in May of this year, but for the previous 9 years, I did voluntary work in my community helping children navigate the disciplinary process in public schools. And as I worked through the 9 years of doing that, probably 70 or 80% of the cases that I handled involved students with disabilities or students undiagnosed. And that's what led me into this world, and I'm very humbled and thankful that my role in Parent to Parent, which is outreach to families across Georgia, is here.
And thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask all of you, since IDEA have, which I'm going to ask one of you to explain what IDEA is. since IDEA have been in place, the special education system has really, really come a long way. I've seen it come a long way since my son has been in the public school system since he was three. He's eight now, too. But I've seen a lot of growth and a lot of things happening, but there's still a lot of issues that exist. And I want you each to weigh in on what you think parents can do to make a difference to improve the services that their child receives. And I would like Pam first to let us know what IDEA is, and then weigh in on what you feel parents can do to help improve the system.
Sure. IDEA stands for, is an acronym for the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And very simply, it's probably the most significant law that gives children in the United States the right to have a free and appropriate public education in the public school system. There was a time in our country when children with special needs did not have that right, and they were not allowed to go to public school. And it was fairly recently, I mean, in the 1960s, when this law actually became in existence. And it is a federal law, so it's applicable to the entire country. And each state does have the ability, as with any law, to interpret it and to implement it as they see fit, as long as they're, you know, complying with the federal regulations. But it is a national law. I think regarding what's fascinating to me about the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act is that, there are unfortunately people in our country who don't think our children should be educated. There's people, unfortunately, in the school system who would rather not have our children in the school system. Parents need to understand, if I could get one thing across, it's that as a parent of a child with special needs who has an IEP, you have so much power in the school system. And that you have much more power than a parent of a typical child in school. There's a lot of children in our country who graduate from school and can't read and write. We know this. But parents have no recourse. They can't hold the school accountable for goals. They can't have meetings and say, why didn't you do this or why didn't this work? When you have a child with an IEP, I think every child in the school system should have an IEP, whether
yeah.
they have special needs or not. So I think parents become more educated and they learn a lot, they will find out that they have a lot of power to influence change for their children and children, other children to follow.
Anne, could you weigh in on that?
Yeah, I can weigh in on that. I totally agree with Pam that, you know, there is still that stigma in society today that people with disabilities should not be seen in our school systems and that they do take, from the educational standpoint, as being a special ed teacher, there is that conflict between special ed and general ed, and general ed teachers see special ed as taking all their money away from them, and so they dislike special ed because they feel that we are the enemy instead of trying to give those students a hand up so that they can, you know, achieve all their goals in life. And I have seen, schools bullying the parents and the parents bullying that they have no power, they have no right. Even though they have the IEP, which is a legal document, which does give them, you know, more rights than a normal or a regular ed student does. But a lot of schools will tell the parents, we know what's best for your child better than you know what's best. And so they bully the parents into a corner. And so it is really important that those parents do learn those advocacy skills so that they don't get bullied by the school system.
Thank you. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that, you know, for me, it's a whole new world to enter into when you have a child in the special education system. It's a whole new world, period, becoming a parent. But specifically with a child with special needs, you don't know what to ask, and even though in my IEP meetings with Zion, I get the parent rights and we get the pamphlets, but I think for a lot of parents, it's overwhelming, and they think as far as advocacy is concerned that it's more to it than just speaking up for their child. They think that so a lot of them shy away from it, and what a lot of parents do is take their child out the system instead of just stepping up and saying this is what, you know, or finding the information that they need through a Parent-to-Parent of Georgia or different programs that are available, or reaching out to someone like you, Pam, to help them out. They just feel overwhelmed. They don't know what to do, so they just withdraw themselves from it. I want Janet now to weigh in on the same question.
A lot of similar, you know, as a parent, I agree with what Pam and Ann said. As a parent center, some of the things that we see is obviously lack of professional development when it comes to the general knowledge of IDEA. I think a lot of the professionals in the system don't really understand what IDEA is about and know what resources the district has, or even, I think, a real pitfall is the professionals don't really know much about our child's individual disability. So as a parent, I have to educate the professionals on the realities of a child with Down syndrome, which is they can, you know, they can accomplish most anything. Tate has over and above accomplished what we were told he wouldn't. So it's really educating the professionals. And you're right, a lot of parents do pull their children out of the system. And in a way, it's such a detriment because the parents are the ones that are going to be changing the system. And the more that parents become knowledgeable on IDEA, on their parental rights, their students' rights, learning about just the simplest things about more time for IEPs, IEPs needing to be at a convenient parent time, who needs to be at the IEP, that is a big one. And then I think if parents become more knowledgeable, then they will in turn be able to make some system changes. And I think the other thing is for us, since we really focus on culturally and linguistically diverse families, is giving families that have that boundary of language the tools to understand that even in their own language they can advocate for their kids in the school. So once parents realize that just because they speak Spanish or another language doesn't mean that they're held back from advocating, then they just roll with it. So it's really cool to see parents that are now taking our classes, learned everything, and they're advocating for their child in their native language at the school level. So it is doable, and I think the more parents, you know, let go of those fears, really get involved with your local parent centers to learn more, you do have a voice. We do have more rights. The 2004 reauthorization gave parents more rights over the educational component of our children, and we really need to utilize that.
I want to go to thank you. I want to go to Jennifer next, and if you can weigh in on the same question.
Well, I think everybody has done an excellent job in terms of covering IDEA and how it impacts families and parents involved at the local school, and then even up to policy changes because the state handles some of the implementations on this regulation. The one thing that hasn't been discussed, which is kind of a continuum of that discussion, is No Child Left Behind and how it is impacting student performance in the subgroup category of students with disabilities. So that adds a whole nother layer once we have segmented out academic performance and graduation rates and everything else for students with disabilities and believe that that is bringing more awareness and more attention, which is an opportunity for communities and parents to work with school systems to talk about the particular subclass of students with disabilities in comparison to the whole, and how can we make gains because the gaps are large.
Yeah. And my experience as well, and I do think that thank you all so much for your input on that. For me as well, I've experienced that, you know, that there is a lack of understanding specific needs for our children. And even with No Child Left Behind, you know, one of the IEP meetings that I had with one of the teachers, well, first let me say real quick that there are a lot of great teachers. There are a lot of great therapists out there, but I think that they're limited to they're kind of stuck in between trying to get the parents more involved and trying to get support from the school system. That's my observation, that a lot of them do want to contribute more or that do more, and a lot of them are doing a really good job, but what I've seen is that they don't have the tools. They don't have, and when I say tools, I mean as far as with regular ed, you have the second grade books that all the second graders are going over. They have, you know, curriculums that set up for you know, different levels of second grade. But I think that there's a lack of curriculum set up for our children. And one of the things, they do have a program now that they test them on, but I'm not okay with how they're being tested. So I think that we are the voice, and I'm agreeing with all of you, we are the voice, and we have to step up and work as a team with the school system to better our children's education. I want to go back to, and if y'all want to jump in, you can. But but I want to go to back to Ann. Ann, your story to me is I love your story, and I love what you're doing. Instead of you going back and saying, well, they said that this is, you know, how my life is going to be, or they said that I'm limited, you push forward anyway. And I want to ask you, where did that drive come from? Was it the support of your mom, or where did the drive come from to say, you know what, I'm going to prove you wrong?
The drive came, from my mom, as a child, I was very blessed. I had my grandparents and my great-grandparents, and, my great-grandparents really said, whatever your goals, whatever your dreams, you can achieve in this life. And they didn't, and when I would get on my little soapbox saying, oh, I'm so dumb, I'm so stupid, my great grandfather would say, "Excuse me, you're not my great granddaughter," because she would never say that. And so it was that drive that, if they have all this belief in me, then I can really do it. And that was kind of like my goal, my dream, that, I have these people believing in me, so I guess I really am better than what the school is telling me. And
wow.
As a result, I did go on. I did go to college. I got my teaching degree. I got my master's degree. And just recently, I ran into my second grade teacher, and I asked her, do you remember me? And she's like, and I told her my name. And I told her exactly what she said to me. And I said, "So, do you think I'm a burden to society?" And she says, "You probably are." And I says, "So, you're telling me I'm still a burden to society, even though I have my master's degree in education and I'm working?" And she's like, "Oh, that's just because they felt sorry for you."
Oh, wow.
And...
Wow.
And here she is, she's still teaching, and I just, I asked her, "Do you know what IDEA is, special ed?" And she's like, "Oh, yeah, it's for all those people who whine, who always want a hand up in life." And I just left it at that, thinking, there are going to be those people that will put those of us with a disability down until they have been given the experience to walk in our shoes to really see what it feels like to have a disability. Then,
well, I really want to, one, commend you for, despite of the ignorance, you rose above it. And I think that a lot of people, disabled or not, can learn a lot from your accomplishments. I want to ask you really quick, as far as the challenges that you faced after you graduated from high school, because you graduated during a time, I think you went to college in the 80s. Am I correct?
The late 80s.
And they didn't have the same programs or have the resources available now that they did I mean, they didn't have it then. They're available, the resources they have available now. So I want to ask, what type of transition did you go through from high school into getting into college? Was it hard to get into college?
It really wasn't hard to get into college. I went to my local university, and they accepted me, which was great. But when I got into college, like, I was very overwhelmed. Like, here I am on this huge campus, not knowing what to do. Luckily, there was a center for students with disabilities, and they had, like, a support group for people that had learning disabilities. And so that kind of gave me some hope. The only sad part that was the professor that was overseeing that was there for, like, 2 quarters, and then her husband was killed in an automobile. No, her husband was a pilot and was killed in a plane crash, and then she just kind of, you know, stopped teaching at the U, and so the whole group dissolved. So it was like my support system was, like, pulled away from me, but I did do it. I did not do a typical 12 credits a year, 12 credits per quarter. You know, I did it in small increments just so that I could, you know, give my attention to the classes that I was taking. So it did take me longer to get through college.
Okay. I want to come back to Pam. Pam, what can parents, as we mentioned earlier, a lot of parents get overwhelmed when they go into the, and first, thank you.
you're welcome.
But Pam, when a lot of parents go into these meetings, they're overwhelmed. There's a lot of information, and not all parents are savvy in research and the internet and accessing the information, or they just don't know what information is available. What role, when you come in as an advocate, what is your role as an advocate for these parents?
I think it's basically three things. First of all, I bring, you know, an advocate, whoever they are, usually has gone to a lot of meetings. And so they bring that experience with them. And, you know, like when I go to an IEP meeting for a student in one specific county, I've probably been in 40 or 50 IEP meetings in that specific county. So one of the things parents need to understand is that it's not just the school that is responsible for educating their child, it's the district, the school district. So consequently, parents think, well, you know, they may be told, well, we don't offer that service here, or we don't have that curriculum here at this school. Then the next question should be, well, do you have it in the county? Okay? Because the county is responsible for educating the child. So there's a lot more resources at a county level than there are at an individual school level. But as an advocate, my responsibility, I think, is the first thing is to make sure that the parents' concerns are heard, that the school personnel listen to the parents and they actually, you know, understand what that parent is trying to convey to them, what their concerns are. The second thing is, as an advocate, my responsibility is to make sure that the child gets the services that they have the right to have, that they qualify for, and, you know, so they get all the services that they have a right to have. And the third thing is to make sure that the schools are compliant with IDEA and the various laws, that they, you know, that they are telling the truth when they say they can or can't do something, and
yeah,
that they follow through. So I think those are my, if I've done all that, then I think the child is well served and the family is well served. One thing I would tell parents is don't go to a meeting alone. Even if you don't have an advocate who's trained to do this, take somebody with you. You can take people with you. You can take your mother. Or, you know, if you have a spouse, take your spouse. Bring those. It makes such a difference to have a team of people with you. Number one, you don't feel alone. Secondly, there's another pair of ears there to pick up on things, and that person, you know, can give you their perspective after the meeting's finished. So I tell parents, just don't ever go alone. Take somebody with you.
I have to reiterate what Pam just said on the don't go alone. Most definitely.
Yeah, and what I noticed, too, is I know initially, and I'll speak for myself, initially I was more emotional. Not crying, but emotional, thinking on an emotional level instead of stepping back and looking, assessing the whole situation and saying, you know, okay, this is what they offer, this is what I can do, and this is what I can do outside of the school as far as, you know, getting him an extra speech therapist if I feel like he needs more than what the school is offering. And a lot of times parents don't know that as far as health care, that's covered under health care. To pay for the they have to get a referral through the doctor, but to pay for certain therapies that's needed, if they feel like it's additional, that's something that is an option as well. And also, you know, I get a lot of emails from parents who, you know, one parent said, well, they have to be realistic. Let me say that. You have to be realistic in what you're asking the school for, because a lot of them are not fighting the right battles. They're fighting the system on something that maybe they feel like their child needs, you know, an hour a day, but the school is offering 2 hours a week, you know.
Right.
So they have to be realistic in what they're fighting for as well, and I would like you to weigh in on that, Janet. Jeanette, I keep calling you Janet.
It's okay. You are absolutely right. That's part of what we do when we're doing our writing effective IEPs is, one, learning to work as a team. It's not us against them kind of thing.
Right.
And it's two, is learning basically the lingo of how to request, it is so critical to understand how to read that IEP, because a lot of parents want to go in there and say, I want 5 hours. No, that's not going to work. That's not realistic. What you need to do is look at the goal look at the goals for, let's say, speech as an example. Then look at the time. Now, contrast the goals with the time. And if they've got like 5 or 6 goals and they've only allotted 15 minutes a day, that obviously is not a congruent goal to speech therapy time ratio. So that's a lot of what we do, is teach them how to look at that and then go in and say, okay, you know, you've got all these great goals, which is awesome, but you're only allotting 15 minutes a day. That basically gets going. So then the schools will look at that and say, okay, that isn't unrealistic, so we do need to modify that. And usually that really works. So it isn't just going to the meetings and everything like that. It's once you're done at the meeting, then looking at that IEP and making sure that everything that you discuss at the meeting is implemented into the IEP. And then you have to stay on them. I'm sorry, it's like white on rice. You've got to stay on them to see that they're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, are they doing the therapies? Are they doing what's supposed to be done? Are they doing the monitoring and testing, you know, and stuff like that? We dropped the ball last year for Tate because we didn't stay on them. I've learned my lesson as an advocate, you know. I tried to be a little more hands-off because I didn't wanted to be one of those helicopter moms, you know, and as they call us because we're always hovering. but I learned my lesson. You know, I had to try it and see. And you really do have to stay on them. You really do have to have them show you the progress. You know, to throw out there, as a parent, you have the right to ask for every copy of every test and everything that is in his file. You can ask for that at any time. You can see that to make sure they're doing the testing. That is all part of what it is to learn what your rights are.
And it's really, really critical to know all of it. So, I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought someone was going to say something. Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think that first we have to, you know, like you were saying, and I mentioned earlier, be realistic and the goals and real and knowing what to ask, knowing what, you know, what my thing at one point was, okay, well, we're having these IEP meetings, we're setting these goals, but I don't know what type of goals I should be setting. I don't know, you know, is he being measured, you know, should he be reading by fifth grade? Is that a far-fetched goal, or should it be third grade? You know, I think a lot of, for me, is saying, okay, what is it I need to be reaching for, you know, or I don't want you, is the pace a little too slow that you have him on? Maybe he can do this or that by a certain age, but if you're just, you know, so it's just trying to understand what to look for, what to ask. And what I did this past summer was I went to Walmart and dollar store too, and got a lot of the pre-K books, the coloring, writing, tracing, pace projects. I got a lot of different projects, and I was tuned in and kind of took myself out of it as his mom, which was hard to do, but kind of step back and look at, okay, this is what he's having a hard time with. This is what he's strong in. And I took that to the teacher and said, these are the areas that I've seen that he needs help with. And these are the areas that he, and now let's set the goals from here.
Or you can Yvonne?
This
is Jennifer from Parent to Parent.
Hey.
Several things you've mentioned. Parent to Parent of Georgia has, in addition to all the education and advocacy that was talked about by Jeanette, we have a unique program here in Georgia, which is designed to give parents emotional support. So because our database is so large of parents that have called us over the years, a parent can call us and ask to be connected to what we call as a supporting parent. And that's a parent who will volunteer their time to talk with another parent who's going through similar concerns. So a parent can request another parent by diagnosis type, by age, by school, by county, by language. And so a lot of those things that you're bringing up in terms of the emotional support component, another objective eyes, set of eyes, or another parent who's been through the steps and can maybe share their developmental goals that their child has established. While no child is exactly like another, it's certainly a good starting place. So I wanted to make sure that I mentioned that's one of our core services, is matching parents to other parents based on, you know, specific needs.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was my next question for you. The different types of training programs that you offer parents, and you also offer workshops and like you were saying, the parent match. I was going to ask another question, but that's, well, actually, I still want to ask that. What's the difference? What is IFSP, and what's the difference in that and IEP?
Well, in our parent center, we're charged with the responsibility to support families of youth and children with disabilities from birth to 26 years of age. So we're all familiar with what an IEP is, and that's the individual education plan for children from 3 to 21. An IFSP is a very similar document, but it's designed for children who are the younger ages. So it's infancy or birth through age two.
Oh, okay.
So that's called an individual family service plan. And this, there's an obligation under the law to begin to create family plans that early for early intervention and connection to resources in the community. So our training, you know, we do one training for birth to two and other training for 3 to 21, but essentially it's the same type of document to support the child and the family when the family is very involved in that early age plan.
Yeah. Okay. If someone else was trying to speak as well.
No, I was just going to point out what IFSP was, but she didn't.
Oh, okay.
I know. Okay. That's the thing about being in the disability world. We have so many acronyms that I always want to make sure we're always spelling them out for everyone.
Well, since you jumped in, what is ESP and how can parents get involved?
Okay, that's something I do under my own hat. I've been doing what is called an ESP, which is Educational Surrogate Parent. I kind of fell into it, and I'm sorry my dogs are going out in the background, so hopefully you can't hear them. It's an Educational Surrogate Parent, and here the Colorado Department of Education has this program. It is for kids that their parent rights have been severed, and so they're in the foster system. And so they need representation at the IEP meetings. And so they have parent volunteers like myself or professional volunteers, whoever has chosen to do it. And we literally go to the IEPs as a parent representative. And we sign their IEP and we're representatives. So there's a whole team that works on the IEP, including the social worker and stuff. But basically our charge as an ESP is to make sure that the child's rights are being met and that the child's needs are being met. So we're kind of like that surrogate parent. And I think it's just a wonderful program that Colorado Department of Ed does, and it's with the districts. I work with DPS mainly, but I've also worked with a few of the other counties. And I think all the Department of Education's around the country have something similar. So if parents want to find out, they can just check with their local Department of Education. But it's just a really good way. It's a really good way for me to work with the schools as a parent professional. I find that the more I work with the school system itself, and the more they trust me that I'm not bad mouthing the education system and stuff. We all know the system is messed up. But I'm not in there to badmouth the teachers. I have friends who are special education teachers who are awesome. And I have lots of friends who are gen ed teachers, and they're wonderful. And so it's hard when they're stuck in the system just the way we are. ESP is just a really good way that I found to give back to underprivileged kids on my own. And I really like it. It's very rewarding. And you really get to learn a lot, and you would be surprised. Those IEPs are amazing. The foster kids really do have a good team of people working to ensure that they're getting everything they can, even though they're in the foster system, which is kind of heartwarming to me to see that.
Yeah. Well, hats off. I love that. And I want to come back to Pam. What are some things parents can do to prepare for the meeting?
I think taking somebody with you, I think sitting down and writing out what your goals are, what you want for your child, write out your questions. I had a mom one time who came to an IEP meeting with a notepad, 8.5 by 11 notepad, and with 6 pages all typed out of all her questions. And she kept that paper in front of her. She went down her list when something was discussed. She checked it off her list. If she had to go back to something, she made a note to herself. And she really was prepared as far as knowing what she wanted to discuss, and she didn't leave it to her memory to try and remember. Because like we spoke about earlier, as a parent, it's a huge emotional situation, and you can't always make sure that your mind is going to remember what you thought it would remember. So I think the biggest thing would be to write down what you want to cover and make sure that, you know, that you take it with you. I think the other thing I want to say, too, is that most parents don't realize that a parent can request an IEP meeting whenever they feel the need to request an IEP meeting. A lot of, you know, by law, districts need to have an IEP meeting once a year. Most of them do at least once a year. But parents can have a meeting more often. And I have some parents that have meetings scheduled at the end of every grading quarter. And they'll go in and they'll talk to the teachers and the therapists, and they'll make sure that the children are on track with their goals. If they've achieved a goal, great, they cross it off. If they need to tweak a goal, then they tweak the goal. And I think that if parents would have could understand that if you have a meeting only once a year, you really don't have much, you don't feel very powerful because you're only weighing in on your child's education once a year. But if you have a meeting, let's say, once a quarter, and I'm sure school districts are crazy, but if you have a meeting once a quarter with your team, then you get to stay on top of what's happening and you feel more part of the team. And all you have to do is, I always tell parents, write a letter to your principal, request principals have the responsibility and authority in the school. You can copy your teacher or the guidance counselor. Just put your request in writing that you're requesting an IEP meeting.
Okay. Thank you so much for that.
And I just wanted to jump in.
Okay.
The other thing is hopefully you have a teacher that will ask the parents what kind of goals they want to see, and that at the IEP meeting that they can write the goals together. So the parents know that they are, that, you know, their voice is important. What goals they would like to see their child accomplish, you know, are being met. And the other thing is I will tell you, my first year of teaching, I had a caseload of 65 special ed students.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did, you know, is I had my IEP meetings with my students once a year. But I would send what I call a progress note home to the parents halfway through the term and then at the end of the term so that the parents could have all that documentation so that they could see, okay, you know, here are the child's goals. Okay, he has mastered maybe benchmarks 1, 2. We're working on benchmark 3 of this goal so that they could have a running progress of how the goals were being worked on or being achieved throughout the year.
That's a good, I think we lost Pam. thank you for that, Ann. And there's just so much stuff swarming in my head right now, and I'm trying to, because as a parent, too, I have a lot of questions, but I think today was very, very helpful for me as well, and I hope that the guest, it was very useful information for them as well. I have a couple of more questions. We may go over a couple of minutes in time, but it's hopefully it's okay with you guys.
Fine with me.
But I wanted to go back to Jennifer and ask the website, and because the parents have maybe a new parent, maybe a little overwhelmed and emotional, and come to the website and they don't know exactly what they should look for. How do your organization help them get started?
Well, the first thing I would recommend is that they just pick up the phone and they call us.
Okay.
We have 14 coordinators across the state of Georgia, broken out by region, that they're waiting on the phone to speak with parents. And essentially that type of conversation is a coordinator listening to the parent's story and then beginning to ask questions about what their needs are. And oftentimes, is the questions the parent doesn't even know some of these needs or hasn't anticipated them yet. And then the coordinator begins to connect them to not only resources, because they can walk a parent through on the computer, or we can just email the resource list to the parents in their communities. But that phone can be picked up at any time, and you're always speaking with the same person. And we help parents. One of our philosophies is meeting parents where they are. So we know that a parent who calls us once the first diagnosis is made is also a parent who's going to have a need for us 4 years down the road. So you can just keep picking up the call, and slowly you can begin to learn our website and how to access information that way if you prefer. And we can also talk to you a little bit about, in your community, do we have parent support groups there? Do we have parent-led community navigator teams? Can we provide your school with training or your community with training? So it's really, I think, picking up the phone for a parent who's just beginning is or just identifies that they have a concern is really the best option, and grow to learn or learn to grow, whatever.
Go ahead.
They can also click on, if they actually go to our website, which is www.p2pga.org, and that's the number 2, there's something called a roadmap to services, and that breaks out all the services that a parent or family or child is going to encounter from birth to 26, and it's pictorial, so it's easy to click through and begin to segment out those needs.
And just to add on to that, in Colorado, we're really lucky in that we have two parent centers here. We have Peak Parent Center, which serves the state, and then we have CPRC, which serves the 6-county metropolitan area. So there's a lot of information for folks in Colorado, but definitely check to see what's in your local state. We also have Parents Parent of Colorado as well. So we're kind of lucky in that we have really good supports here. And I know that there's a lot around different states, and people just have to kind of tap into that. But it's definitely a phone call worth making.
It is, and I want to ask one quick question. I have some of the parents that reach out to me, like mainly small areas, small towns, don't have a lot of resources. So is there some way they can, like say if there's a local small town outside of Colorado or outside of Georgia, can they still reach out to somewhere that's near?
I can answer that. Are you talking about within the state of Georgia, or small towns?
No, let's say they're outside of Georgia, but they're not too far from Georgia, but their area don't have a lot of resources.
Well, one of the things that the National Parent Center Technical Assistant Group opened up is a website that essentially covers the entire United States for parent centers, and you know, I can give you that website. So anyone in any state can go to this website and kind of narrow down their search of resources to call.
Okay.
And
Yvonne. Yeah, and Yvonne, just to add, because like we're close to Nebraska and stuff like that. If they're more than welcome to call us, and if they call us, then we'll find out what is close to them. I know in Nebraska I have a lot of requests for information on individuals with Down syndrome because they don't have a Down syndrome association. And so I connect them with our local ones. So our Mile High Down syndrome has a lot of families that they're serving in Kansas and in Nebraska because they don't have that. So the answer is yes. If they call us, we'll make sure to connect them to what's locally, whether it be disability specific or not.
And I'm going to make sure that I put all of your information on the Blog Talk Radio, your links to your websites. But also I would like you each to take a moment and leave us with some final thoughts before we go, and then followed by your contact information, your website, or whatever information you would like people to go to find out more information.
Okay. Who do you want to start with?
anybody can just jump in.
Well,
go, Jennifer?
I'll start. As parent to parent of Georgia, pick up the phone. Become informed of your rights. Do as much research as you possibly can. But mostly just pick up the phone and talk to a coordinator here. There are so many resources and areas of research that we can help you with, obstacles that we can remove, and we can work with you each step of the way. It isn't a one-time thing. The phone can be picked up Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30. So our website is www.p2pga.org, or you can call a 1-800 number, and this is for any parent anywhere in Georgia or elsewhere if they want to pick up the phone, and we'll connect you to your right parent center. 1-800-229-2038, and if you actually go to our website, you can link to the national website if you're interested in doing research outside of the state of Georgia as well.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'll go to Jeanette.
I answer to everything. I've been called Jennifer too. So, just final thoughts, again, connect with your local parent centers and local organizations that are serving your child's specific disability. It's a phone call that you will never regret. I've had parents who have told me that they balked at being part of a support group and then later were like, I don't know why I didn't. You know, become connected with some of the other parents, because we, although our kids' disabilities may be similar, we have different things and stuff, but connecting to each other and just knowing that you're not the only one that's going through what you're going through really, really helps you kind of get through. So it's amazing what you'll learn from the parent centers, and it's amazing what you learn just from connecting with the parents locally that are close to you. Denver Metro Community Parent Resource Center, our website is www.denvermetrocprc, so that's Cat Peter Roger Cat .org, or you can call us at 303-365-2772, 303-365-CPRC, and we're available Monday through Friday as well, and we just want you to pick up the phone and connect. And if you suspect that your child has a disability and you don't know what to do, pick up the phone and call us as well, because that's also part of our charge to help you through that.
Wow.
So thank.
Go ahead.
So I was just going to say thanks for having me on.
Oh. thank you. Anne.
My final thoughts are, as parents, you know, encourage your child, you know, that they can achieve any goals, any dreams that they have for themselves. And just, you know, get involved and make sure that, you know, you have those resources available and that you are not bullied by the school system. If parents want to contact me, they can contact me. My phone number is 801-707-6006, or they can just send me an email to my email address is wolfieconsulting@gmail.com.
Thank you. And since I don't know what happened with Pam, I think her phone dropped off, but I'm give her information. Her name is Pam Lederman, and her organization is called the IEP Advocate Incorporated. Her website is the theIEPAdvocate.com, theadvocate.com, and her number is 407. It's on her website, so I'm not just giving it out. 407. 342-986, I'm sorry, 9836. Again, that's 407-342-9836. So I want to, well, one, someone in the chat room said they applaud you for all, applaud all of you ladies for what you're doing. And I applaud you, and I thank you all so, so, so much for, you know, stepping out and helping, and I think you are doing a great job for the special needs community as a parent and somewhat of an advocate myself. I'm really inspired by what all of you are doing. So I want to thank you for joining us, and I hope that the listeners gained quite a bit of information and to reach out to you ladies, and to that there are resources out there. There are, this information is available. It's a matter of reaching out and getting the information you need for your child to help with their potential. And you said something to me the other day, Anne. You said, I really want parents not to set low expectations.
That's exactly.
And I think that that's very motivating. And I think that, you know, because there's a lot of parents that do it without kids with special needs. You know, they set low expectations on their kids. And I just wanted to take a moment to bring that up, because I really love that you, I love your story, and I love what you're doing to help other kids that are special needs.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that's why.
That's awesome, Anne.
What?
I said, you're awesome, Anne, because it just reiterates what, it reiterates and it reinforces what myself and my ex-husband are doing for Tate, which is having those high expectations and keeping them high even though people tell us we're nuts. So it's very nice to hear that from you.
Oh, thank you.
Yvonne?
Well, yes.
This is Jennifer from Georgia Parent to Parent. I'd like to be able to give out the National Parent Center Network database, primarily because if a family goes there, they can actually search through all 109 parent centers for information about diagnoses and everything else.
Okay.
And you're not doing a Google search. You're actually only researching the databases of all of the parent centers in the United States, and it's really helpful. So can I give that information, please?
You sure can.
It's www.parentcenternetwork.org. And know that when you do a search in the search button, you're looking at all the parent centers and the community parent center resources, technical assistant guidance documents. Really, really good resource.
Thank you. And you said it's Parent Center Network?
ParentCenterNetwork.org.
Okay. And I'm going to put all this information on the website as well, on the Blog Talk Radio and other sites where I promote the show. I'll add, because I think, and on my website, I'm going to add the information, because I think that it's vital. It's very crucial that the parents have not only have access to this information, but they need to know that a lot of this information is available. And there's really no excuse to not access. I don't know, no nice way of saying it, but there's there's no excuse.
That was good,
why, why they can't access this information. And really, really, because at the end of the day, it's about the child. And it's about being there for them and letting go of the fears and the pity and all the other stuff that's preventing a lot of parents from being the best parent they can be for the child. So I want to thank you ladies again for all that you do. And thank you for joining me on my show today, and I commend you all.
Well, thank you, Yvonne, for having this radio show and a good venue for us to talk about what we do. And nice to meet you, Jennifer, over on our counterpart in Georgia. So
yes, nice to meet you too.
Nice to meet nice to meet you, Jeanette and Jennifer. And thank you, Yvonne, for having the show and your website to help children and parents.
Nice to meet you, Anne.
Welcome to the
Housemen Supply. Oh, no matter who pushes me, I know I'm not gonna let you. I'm not gonna let you get me down. No, no, no.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I thank you for choosing this time to spend with me, your host, Yvonne Pierre. For more information about the show, how to be a guest, or to simply let me know what you think about today's show or previous shows, visit me at ypierre.com. That's www.ypierre.com. Remember to keep God first. Know that you are blessed, and always stay true to yourself. I love you, God loves you, and thank